Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport. Game Day, Premier League preview show.
Hello, this is Sam Matterface with the Game Day preview podcast from TalkSport. No need to be rash. Marcus gives a timely reminder of his talent ahead of the Manchester Derby, which is live on TalkSport at 5.30 this weekend and around the world on Premier League Live. But there won't be too many pats on the head. After all, lads, it's only Tottenham. Lackluster in midweek, Mourinho's men will need to be better against Burnley. Now, the Belgian manager was too naive. The Holland manager didn't get it. The former England manager played the wrong type of football. Now, after a desperate dash to make Marco the manager, he's no good either. Ever think the problems might be elsewhere? Maybe they'll look at Bournemouth. They, after all, have got Liverpool visiting this weekend with Salah, Alisson, Firmino and Henderson nice and fresh. Also, West Ham against Arsenal, dream team options for Villa and Leicester, plus Newcastle, Southampton, Watford, Crystal Palace, Norwich, Sheffield United and Brighton versus Wolves. And this week in the pod studio, the gloriously gorgeous Danny Gabardon. Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, Sam.
Good. And someone who could do with a few tips in the wardrobe department, Alex Crook, how are you?
It's a bit harsh, I just knew there was going to be a juxtaposition there. Yeah.
Just because you look $1 million today. Wow. Yeah. Sticking it out on you.
Yeah. I always think waistcoats look better on tall people, though, so he's doing his best.
Why don't you wear one, then? What have you been up to this week? It's been a busy week of Premier League action. What have you been doing?
It has been, yeah. I covered the Merseyside Derby last night for TalkSport International, so obviously that one was a crazy game. What else have I been doing? I had a golf lesson.
Oh, right, okay.
Took the family out.
Are you any good
Sunday
at golf?
Lunch.
Footballers are usually quite good at golf.
I'm trying to get there.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't really play enough when I was playing. It was just on and off. So now I've kind of finished playing. I want to.
You've got a bit more time
get
on your hands.
To a decent level,
Alex can give you some tips. He's always on the golf course.
Decent, Alex. Yeah.
In the summer, I'm done now. I'll start again in March. Yeah.
His club is not very good though. Right. First up, Solskjaer's Spurs success. A model for giving Pep the blues, possibly.
It's blocked to the full-on shot by Rodri. Is clattered into the roof of the net.
We are playing good. I know that you are not agree because it depends on the results we will be judged, but I think except 20 minutes against Chelsea after conceding a goal, they were better. We were a little bit, out of the game. The rest of the games, even in Anfield and Newcastle today, we were in a high level.
And 6 minutes in, Marcus Rashford with the first shot of the game hammers Manchester United into the lead.
Anyone wants to criticise Man United, no matter what we do, 2-1 now, and then you didn't last the 90 minutes or we're tired towards the end. That's just normal for us here. I've been here as a player and a coach, and I'm used to us not being always talked about in a positive way. No problem.
It is our big game of the weekend. Manchester City against Manchester United, the Manchester Derby. Intensity, aggression, smothering all over Tottenham. United flew out of the traps against Mourinho's men, but can they play that way against Manchester City? Because usually, look, they don't perform against teams that they're expected to beat, and then they up their game against the top six or the teams that they're expected to be thrashed by. But Manchester United, can they do that two games in a row, do you think, Danny Gabardon?
That is the big question. Looking at Man City and how they played the other night against Burnley, I think it's a tough ask for them. They looked really sharp, Man City, back to their best, popping the ball about. Obviously,
really?
Jesus coming up with a couple of goals. They really looked at it and looked really focused and in tune with how important it was to get a result there. So, United, I just they're not where they need to be. I know, obviously, a good result against Tottenham.
I was there at the game. I thought they played really well. For half an hour, the first half an hour, they absolutely bossed that match. Rashford running at the defenders. I mean, there's Sissoko getting dragged out of position, caused all sorts of issues as well. But ultimately, I thought their attitude and application was better than I've seen them all season. I think that was the best home performance of the campaign.
Yeah, well, that's what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has kind of spoken about, isn't he? He keeps banging on about building a culture, getting the kind of the team spirit right, the right players into the football club. And that is what you have to do first and foremost before you do anything. So that is going to take a little bit of time. When you get that, then I think you start getting consistency then with results. So I think it's a good test for United. Obviously, off the back of the Tottenham win, they'll want to continue that momentum. As you said, against kind of the bigger sides, they tend to kind of raise their game and get results. And you mentioned here, Marcus Rashford, he is the man who's on fire at the minute. So I don't need a big performance from him again.
You mentioned Gabriel Jesus. And often, I think, sometimes that they lack a little bit when Aguero is not there, because he doesn't score the same sort of numbers of goals that Aguero does. But he gives you something different, doesn't it, Gabriel Jesus? He's a harasser. He leads the press. He rats around, causes problems for central defenders. Would that cause a problem for Manchester United?
Yeah, he probably does more work outside the penalty area than Aguero. He's very much the predator, the finisher. I think Gabriel Jesus does bring a bit more to the Manchester City performance. And listen, United is certainly not watertight defensively. Harry Maguire did really well, as you called it on TalkSport, in the battle of the two Harrys, kept Kane very quiet. I still think he looks like he's got a mistake in him. Same with Lindelof, who plays at left back. Luke Shaw obviously is being slowly reintroduced. Young could start there. Williams. I think City will score. It's going to be a case of whether Manchester United can outgun them, really. And Marcus Rashford is going to be integral to that. 13 goals in 33 games of him against the Big Six. This is a player who is rapidly becoming the big game player for Manchester United. He stuck away that pressure penalty in Paris as well. And I think Scott McTominay brings a new dimension to the team. He gives Solskjaer the confidence to allow the forward players to express themselves. He gets up and down the pitch better than the likes of Wan-Mata. He offers that shield to what is a suspect defence. So if he's fit, it's going to be a big boost.
Have formed a little bit of a partnership, haven't they? You know, between the two of them. I mean, Fred played quite well, actually, on Wednesday night as well. Interestingly, though, Alex is an out Manchester United fan, but he undulates between absolute disaster and total triumph on a daily and a match-by-match basis.
Hourly.
At the weekend after Aston Villa, he was just peppering the WhatsApp group, telling us how bad things were and Pochettino had to come in.
Benton.
And then last night, Ollie's a genius. He sent us a picture of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Jose Mourinho and said Solskjaer's the real special
one. Oh, was that when he was patting him on the head after victory? That was awesome, yeah.
So where are you this week? Where are you in the sort of spectrum of should he stay, should he go? Where are United?
Well, before the game, I was expecting a Spurs. We wouldn't actually put money on Tottenham, so serves me right.
Very loyal of you.
Absolutely. And I was calling for Pochettino. I still think Pochettino is the right man long term. If you said to anybody who knows anything about football, you can hire Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as your manager or Pochettino, anyone who says Solskjaer is either mad or a liar.
Apart from Ed Woodward.
Well, don't get me started there. But I actually fancy them to get something in the Manchester derby. So that's just going to prolong the agony that is Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
We'll get you to build a case for that in just a second. But do you agree with him? Is there any chance that Manchester United to come away with something? I mean, they have a particularly good record there. I think they've only lost one of their last four trips to City.
Yeah, I just can't see it. I can see City being on their game again, and I can just see them picking United apart. You know, Jesus against Maguire is a good matchup there, as we said. I think his movement, you know, you look at Maguire's kind of lack of mobility, and I think movement in and around him is a bit of a problem for him.
Sterling's not firing.
No, he's not, actually.
He's due a goal. It's one of those games, right? We do this with David Connolly every week, where we just talk about the fact that he said that Arsenal are on the verge of something special, and now we are where we are with Arsenal. So come on, this is your blueprint for Manchester United to get something from Manchester City. We're going to clip this up and bring it back next week when they've lost 5-0. Go for it.
Play on the front foot. Manchester United's best form of defence is attack. They've got players in Rashford and Daniel James who can really hurt, to me, what is not a great Manchester City defence. Rashford, as I say, is the big game player. He will turn it on again. McTominay can boss the midfield like he did against Tottenham. Paul Pogba may even be fit to return, probably only as a substitute. I think Manchester United are going to outscore Manchester City at the Etihad. That's my prediction.
You think Manchester United are going to outscore Manchester City.
I do.
Wow.
I'm not sure about that.
Great odds on that, though. I mean,
see,
you know.
I don't know how United go about this one, because you say play on the front foot. Can they do that against Man City?
And leave themselves exposed.
Do they have the players to go and press Man City? I'm not so sure.
But I don't think you're playing Manchester City at the peak of their powers. I mentioned Sterling's gone off the boil a bit. Despite what we said about Gabriel Jesus and his qualities outside the box, he isn't the natural goal scorer that Sergio Aguero is. If John Stones plays at the back, I fancy Rashford to get a bit of joy there. He's in the form of his life.
You never know. And City, you know, I thought they were really slick against Burnley on Tuesday night. They still conceded a goal. And in fact, they haven't kept a clean sheet in any match since October the 26th, which is a run of 8 straight games. That's an odd statistic for me. I find that very strange that they keep conceding so many goals.
Yeah, well, you can look at Liverpool as well, flying high at the top and... Was that eight games now or something?
We may look at that in a little bit more detail a little bit later on then. Let's turn our attention to Everton against Chelsea. And after a filleting at Anfield, Everton welcome Chelsea to Goodison Park. This is the first game day offering we've got for you on TalkSport this weekend and around the world on Premier League Live. It's a 12:30 kickoff in the UK. Now, who's going to want to replace Marco Silva at Everton? I mean, I gave Eddie Howe a mention on Twitter last night and the response was absolutely startling.
Did you get pelters?
Yeah. I mean, he's a man that has taken a club from the bottom tier to the top tier of English football and stabilised the club with an average attendance of 11,000 in the Premier League. However, the Everton fans, whose previous managers have been, by the way, Roberto Martinez, who they took from relegated Wigan, and Marco Silva, who got relegated with Hull and almost relegated with Watford, and then had this desperate dash to get hold of him... And he hasn't lived up to expectation, suggests that Eddie Howe is beneath them and he couldn't possibly do a decent job there and they want a much bigger name. What bigger name are they going to get, do you think?
Well, that is the issue, I think, with Everton as a football club now, how they're looking to progress. Obviously, the financial backing that they have, maybe that's got a lot of the fans' expectation levels a bit too high. I think that's probably been a lot of the issues with the recruitment as well. They've got the money to spend, but can they attract the high quality player that with the money that they have? No, they can't, because they're not at that level as a football club yet. So you probably end up with the Snyderlins, those kind of players, the Iwobis coming into your club who are probably not good enough, really. So that's been part of the problem. I mean, you look at their fixtures coming up as well. Would you want to take the job on their fixtures?
Well, that is the other thing. I actually spoke to someone who has... not been offered the job, but someone who's been sort of looking on the outside, looking in, and maybe one of the contenders to come in. And the view was, well, yeah, it'd be great to go in there and then look at the fixtures. I said, look at the fixtures that are coming up here. Who you got to play between now and January? And then it was sort of like a bit reticent. Well, we'll see what happens.
Change their tune.
All of a sudden, everyone starts to back off a little bit. And you can understand that, really, because they've got huge fixtures. You know, mentioned Chelsea. I think they've got to play Arsenal in the next couple of weeks as well. Manchester United away from home. And then they've got Manchester City before the start of the new year. And then their first game of the new year in the FA Cup is against Liverpool.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'm surprised that Marco Silva has fouled so spectacularly. I mean, this is a man who came in at Hull City, kept them in the... they went down. was brilliant at Watford for a month and has proven that he can't motivate players. I mean, look at Richarlison's reaction after scoring the goal last night. If that tells you all you need to know about just how unhappy the Everton players with the man who's leading them from the sidelines. He's got no tactical ability. He went to Liverpool and thought the best way to play was to invite them on, which was defensive suicide, and so it proved. I agree with you, Sam. I think Eddie Howe is a great contender. I don't understand that the delusion of grandeur that the Everton fans have got. They haven't won a trophy since 1995. They finished in the top four once and then lost in a Champions League playoff to Villarreal. Didn't even get in the group stage that season. They are a club, historically in the Premier League era, who spend more time in the bottom half of the table than the top. So if they're going to turn their noses up at Eddie Howe, I would love to see who they want to come in.
They've turned their nose up at the Holland manager, the Belgian manager and the former England manager. And that's no... I'm not having a go at Everton fans here, but ultimately it is a difficult crowd to please. And there are reasons for that. My view on it is that the structure behind the scenes is actually the biggest issue. Because it's all right saying they've got great investment and they're buying loads of players, but they're buying bad players.
Yeah.
They're not buying well with any thought, forethought or long strategic plan. They employed Steve Walsh because he picked up a couple of great players when he was at Leicester. But he worked in a Leicester system which was all geared towards that, the first team, and it was well-oiled machine. Everton, he just came, parachuted in, and they expected him to work miracles. It doesn't work like that. You know, if you're going to organically grow a football club from nothing to something, it takes time, it takes investment and a clear plan. And Everton at the moment seem to be a mismatch of different plans and different people's plans, and they certainly are a mismatch of different people's squads.
Well, that's also the case at boardroom level, isn't it? Because if the reports
are to be believed,
one owner wanted Eddie Howe, one wanted somebody else, one wanted another, that they need to come up with their blueprint.
Well, they haven't got an owner, have they? They've got a majority stakeholder in Farhad Moshiri. Yeah. They've got Marcel Brands, who's supposed to be the director of football but doesn't really have much influence in first-team affairs. Yeah. And you've got Bill Kenwright, who's got a 5% stake in the club, but ultimately seems to call a lot of the shots because of his long-term affiliation.
He's the one
club.
Who wanted Eddie Howe, isn't he? Bill Kenwright.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Eddie Howe's an Everton fan, or was as a boy, wasn't he? So, I mean, that sort of has a sort of connection. But the Everton fans don't want him. So who else would they get? Who else should they go for?
Well, David Moyes is the one that's a hot favourite.
Well, that's more forward-thinking than Eddie Howe, isn't it?
Well,
is it 2004?
Well, you look at the situation that they're in, and I think it probably has to be short-term at the minute to try and just keep themselves in the Premier League, because they are...
They're not going to go down.
Well, you say that, but watching them against Liverpool, I tell you what, the way...
Well, they are in
the
relegation fight. There's no doubt about that.
They are. That's the way they have to kind of look at things.
But there are three worst teams.
I would be shocked if they went down. But
if they continue to play the way they are, and with the games that they've got upcoming... I think we mentioned this 3 or 4 weeks ago. Things are going to get a lot worse before they get better at Everton.
Yeah. Well, it's a worry for me. You look at their team not scoring enough goals.
Conceding
goals. I don't see any leaders in that team either.
There's no real direction in terms of play. You don't understand the pattern of play. You don't know what the Marco Silva philosophy is.
There's no relationships between players, you know, different systems.
They were arguing the other night.
Yeah, it's just all over the place in so many ways in a minute. So I think it probably has to be a short-term view at the minute, and you know who is available, who can get them out of the situation they're in, and then maybe you get to the summer and reassess things again.
Aren't they still paying Big Sam? Just get him to earn his money, get him back in the dugout.
He's in Dubai, and he's going to Dubai for Christmas.
I think that would go down particularly well with the Everton fans.
But listen, this is a problem when you let fans choose your manager, because they were all massively in favour of Marco Silva. He's been a disaster. They don't want Eddie Howe. I can't understand that. I think he would be the perfect fit, because fundamentally there is a good squad there that just needs a bit of guidance. I think players like Tom Davis, Alex Iwobi, Michael Keane would improve under Eddie Howe. He'll play the type of football that Everton fans want to see, that he's front foot attacking football. But unlike Silva, he will have some kind of tactical nous as well. And he's not as soft a touch as I think people on the outside think.
Just ask
Sylvain Distin, who had to leave Bournemouth a month before the end of his contract after he fell foul of Eddie Howe. So he won't be afraid to go on and go in there and take on the big egos. And I think this would be the right time for him. I think he's a bit frustrated at Bournemouth, not just with results, but maybe by one or two things off the field. There was talk of a new stadium. That hasn't happened. I think he sees a lack of progress off the pitch. The training ground is dragging on as well. Everton have got a new stadium in the offing. That they have the capability to be one of the big clubs outside the big four or five, I think it's the perfect fit. I think it's the perfect time.
What about his troubles at Burnley? That's the accusation that's always levelled at him.
Yeah, but no manager's a success everywhere. I mean, look at Jose Mourinho. He's been to clubs and failed. Burnley was the wrong time, really. He was still a relatively young manager. He had a young family. His wife never settled in the Northwest. He inherited a Burnley side who were just relegated from the Premier League. They're on their way down, really.
But you would imagine that the family would have to settle in the Northwest again if he went to Everton.
Yeah, but maybe they're at a better stage now. I think he just lost his mum at the time as well, which was a big blow to the Howe family.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
I wouldn't hold Burnley against him too
much.
The
other thing I would say about that Burnley situation, and a lot of Burnley fans came back at me about that last night, and I said to them, you know, Sean Dyche got fired very quickly after taking over Watford. He wasn't particularly impressive there. I know he was very quickly fired, a bit trigger happy down at Watford, but ultimately every manager has a poor outcome at some employment.
Look at Gareth Southgate. He was a figure of fun at Middlesbrough, and now all of a sudden he's going to lead England to win the European Championship.
Look at Brian Clough. I mean, when he left Derby County, he went down to Brighton. They didn't play particularly well. I think they got beaten by a fourth division team in the cup, and he was, you know, operating in the third division at the time, and then ended up getting a job at Leeds United. So, look, ultimately, if you write people off after just one failure in one job, then you're getting rid of a lot of characters.
Yeah, some of your best learning is done from your bad experiences, isn't it? It's the same as a player. When you have a bad game, sometimes you learn a lot more from those performances than when you're playing well. So, I mean, you look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. I spent a bit of time with him when he was Cardiff
City manager.
He's
learning almost every week.
He is. And at that point, you could see he was an inexperienced manager. But now he's in the hot seat of Manchester United, and I'm sure he's learned and moved on from those kind of bad experiences that he's had. He can't be the same manager as he was a few years ago. Impossible. So
I think Howe definitely learned a lot from Burnley. And I think Eddie Howe, he either has to go now or he doesn't go at all. Mm. I know there are people at Arsenal who do rate Eddie Howe. They're not going to hire Howe now after Tottenham have taken Mourinho. You don't go from Bournemouth to Arsenal. You need a sort of middle rung on the ladder. Everton, West Ham would be perfect for that. But if he doesn't take one of these jobs, he's just going to see out his career at Bournemouth. And I think he's more ambitious than that.
Everton, with their worst start to the season since 1999. Chelsea in fourth have had an iffy patch. That will happen. But Mount and Abraham on the score sheet again. I think December is going to be a big month for Chelsea. They've got a defining game in the Champions League and matches against Tottenham and Arsenal that, if they win them, will cement their place in the top four. Tammy limping out of the match on Wednesday night with injury would worry me a little bit. He's been magnificent. And their defence as well is a little bit iffy. Four clean sheets in 23 games. But, and going back to the point that you made earlier in the pod, Danny, maybe we should take this as a sign that the game at the top level is actually changing, because City don't keep clean sheets, Liverpool don't keep clean sheets, Ajax don't keep clean sheets, Barcelona don't keep clean sheets. Maybe they aren't the be-all and end-all. Maybe now we're playing such progressive football that the idea is actually to go out and outscore your opponents.
Yeah, I think most of the top teams tend to play that way. They're on the front foot and they're looking to score goals, and maybe the defensive side of the game is secondary. I think you look at Liverpool last season, the amount of clean sheets they kept, and they still didn't win the league. And it seems as if Jurgen Klopp kind of reassessed things in the summer and said, you know, how can we get better? How can we improve? And you've seen them this season holding a much higher kind of defensive line. It almost seems as if they're trying to squeeze teams even more and kind of control the spaces a lot more, so, you know, the midfield players, the attacking players have got less space to run when the ball gets turned over, and they can go and press quicker and pen teams in. And, you know, it's been working fairly well, but it has left them more vulnerable kind of defensively. You've seen a lot of teams now just playing that direct ball kind of over the top, and they've been caught out quite often. But, you know, I think teams are always looking to evolve and improve, and you see the top manager and they don't seem to worry too much when they concede a couple. Jurgen Klopp hasn't been worrying about their record defensively this season. So Chelsea have been pretty much the same, haven't they? Playing some sparkling football, scoring goals, very good away from home. Tammy Abraham, seems to score every time he plays away from home as well. So it is about getting that balance right. But the top teams, the players that they have, the quality they have going forward, more often than not, they are going to outscore the opponents. Yeah.
Chelsea have won only one of their last five trips to Goodison and only four of their last 14. Might be a silver lining after all. Right, coming up, Bournemouth-Liverpool. But first, what's going on with Crystal Palace? Here's Tom Rennie.
Bottom of the table, Watford continue to struggle. Just 8 points this season, that's less than Leicester, who beat them on Wednesday, have picked up in their last three matches. Manager Hayden Mullin, still in caretaker charge after the sacking of Quique Sanchez-Flores, says he saw plenty of fitness and intelligence from their midweek loss. But can he turn that into the only thing that matters now? Points on the board. Troy Deeney got through 87 minutes on Wednesday, so it might be tough for him to start again here. But having scored just 9 all season at a rate of 0.6 per game, the Hornets need him to recover quickly. That's the second worst record in Europe, by the way, behind Leganés of La Liga. Crystal Palace have now won back-to-back games after their 1-0 win over Bournemouth in midweek, victories both coming without conceding. Despite having 10 men for 70 minutes against the Cherries, they were barely troubled. Manager Roy Hodgson says their sterling season is down to the outstanding attitude of his players.
Bournemouth, who have only won one less game than Manchester United and Tottenham this season, take on the leaders Liverpool, worth pointing out. Four defeats in a row for Eddie Howe. Anyone coming back from injury to provide some cherry aid, Alex?
Well, no, they were hoping David Brooks might be ready to return at some point in the immediate future, but he's had a bit of a setback. Joshua King, possibly, obviously picked up that hamstring injury. I think getting him back would be a massive boost. When you look at Dominic Solanke, still hasn't scored a goal.
What are you laughing
for? Well, can't it abandon?
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, Eddie Howe has talked him up week in, week out this season about his work off the board, his link up with Callum Wilson. If you pay £20 million for a striker, ultimately he's judged on putting the ball in the net. He hasn't done that. He's only ever scored one career club goal. Wow. And they spent £20 million on Dominic Solanke.
But they're not the only ones to take a gamble on him, are they? I mean, Chelsea released him and Liverpool picked him up and took him on a free transfer. It didn't work out for them. They then sold him down to Bournemouth. It hasn't worked out there either. Is he just not a Premier League striker, do you think? And that's harsh on the kid.
He isn't at the minute. But to be honest with you, I was looking at Tammy Abraham's start of the season and thinking, would he be able to step up to the level? And he has.
At least he scored goals somewhere before this season.
But you can understand why Chelsea allowed Solanke to go, knowing that they had Abraham in the ranks as well.
I don't think that was the only factor.
What are you trying to say, Alex?
I think his lack of ability may have come into it as well.
Possibly, yeah.
He's scored a lot of goals in the youth
under
team.
Under 21s, England under 21s, he bangs goals in for fun. Mm. But for whatever reason, I mean, he didn't get a lot of opportunities at Liverpool, to be fair, did he? He was, the odd appearance here and there. And when he did play, to be fair, he didn't quite look up to the standard. He didn't do enough to affect the game to want more opportunities. I think they were delighted, Liverpool, when Bournemouth came in and offered that kind of money. Couldn't get rid of him probably quick enough. He's gone down to Bournemouth, and I thought that might be a good move for him. I thought Eddie Howe would get him playing, get him scoring goals. But, you know, the way kind of Bournemouth play as well, they tend to play obviously 4-4-2. You think with a strike partner up there with him, it might kick him into life. But for whatever reason, it's just not happening.
There was a stage earlier in the season when having him in the team was bringing the best out of Callum Wilson, but even that's dried up now. And it's a big problem for Bournemouth that their success over the last 2-3 seasons has been the link-up play largely between the likes of Brooks, who's injured, but particularly Fraser and Callum Wilson. Again, that partnership hasn't been in evidence this season. Maybe it's because Fraser's head is elsewhere. He's letting his contract run down. He's been linked with some big clubs like Liverpool and Arsenal. But they've just lost their identity a little bit, Bournemouth. We talk about identity a lot on the pod. They've tightened up at one end, which was a problem, but I think it's had a detrimental effect on them creating and scoring chances.
Well, that's obvious that that's going to happen. If you put things in place that make you more solid, you're going to lose something from the other end of the pitch because you're not committing as many men forward. And certainly that has been a bit of a problem for Bournemouth. But they do go in spells, don't they, where they win a batch of games and then lose a batch of games, and they're a bit streaky like that. Four games without a win now. They need to turn it round, but they're not going to do that against Liverpool, are they?
No, and you can actually trace this decline back a bit further because it's 5 wins in 23 in the Premier League dating back to last season. In fact, if you took a league table of the last 38 games, that's a whole season. Bournemouth are in the bottom three.
Liverpool were absolutely frightening on Wednesday night, an 8-point lead. The only man who really can stop them from winning the Premier League is arguably the man that stopped them from winning the Premier League the last time it looked odds on, Brendan Rodgers. And I know that sounds a little bit harsh, but because he could have drawn that game against Chelsea and he might have been a little bit more successful if he'd protected the lead against Palace when they were up and on the verge of winning the title. But the basic premise is true. He's the only man who can stop them, isn't he? Because no one else is anywhere near them.
Well, I wouldn't rule Man City out.
From this far back?
No, they can do it. They're the champions. They have that mentality and they have the squad. They have the players. And you look at the busy period of games now that Liverpool have, their squad is going to be tested. You know, you saw Jurgen Klopp make, four or five changes for the Everton game.
It didn't affect them, though, did it?
Well, I was surprised, actually. I was a little bit worried looking at that starting lineup going into the game. I thought that would have been massive incentive for Everton, but obviously, it wasn't the case. They pretty much beat him with their B team, and it probably is the strongest Liverpool squad that Jurgen Klopp has had. And it is going to be tested now over the next few weeks, and you are going to see rotation. And you do look at the way Liverpool play, and kind of that midfield area. It's probably key more for me that midfield area than actually the front three. And that's going to have to rotate. The forward players at times are maybe going to have to rotate. And will that affect kind of the cohesion of the team as a whole? I don't know. So it's a big period for Liverpool. But Leicester, no one's talking about him. This is what's not everyone's saying about the gap between Liverpool and Man City, the gap between Liverpool and Man City. Nobody's talking about Leicester, which is probably a good thing as well.
We'll focus on them in just a second. We're going to do those dream team picks because there's a couple of really interesting statistics about the bedrock of their success as well. But let's move on to a London derby on Monday night. Is Freddie ready?
Towards the near post. Oh, and a chance from Mustafi. Good block. Aubameyang! 2-2. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang with a captain's goal for Arsenal. His second of the afternoon. And for the second time, Freddie Ljungberg's Gunners have come from behind.
Here come West Ham. Here's Aaron Cresswell. Beats his man right-footed. What a goal from Aaron Cresswell. And West Ham strike first in the London derby. Chelsea 0, West Ham 1.
The Freddie Ljungberg derby takes place on Monday night. Arsenal, we have talked a lot about over the last few weeks. They and the world's most expensively acquired substitute, Pepe, are in a state of flux. Manuel Pellegrini is on the chopping block too. One win in 10 games. And he comes out after the Wolves defeat and says, set pieces are a bit of a problem. We've conceded at least eight goals from set pieces. We need to manage those better. I think maybe he should be managing those a little bit better.
It's almost like both these teams should have signed some proper top quality defenders at the start of the season. Who'd have guessed that?
Karen Brady sent out a little message in her column the other week. It was like a little warning, wasn't it? It was like she said, when the pressure is on, leaders show what they're made of. She then goes on to sort of back Pellegrini, but you sort of got what she meant. It was basically buck up or ship out. But he hasn't helped himself, I don't think. He came out and said that after the game against Wolverhampton Wanderers. He also said, I think it's more important that we win our home games. And he made a joke in the pre-match presser about, with Unai Emery being fired and Everton losing, that he was no longer the favourite to get the sack. I'm not entirely sure he's sending the right messages.
He's lost his marbles.
Coming across as if he's sort of taking it seriously enough. Is that the right philosophy or is he just trying to take the pressure off? What's he doing?
I don't know what he's trying to do. And that's probably part of the problem. I think the players don't probably understand what he wants as well, because it certainly looks that way. Defensively, particularly from set pieces, all season they've been poor. Alex, you mentioned they probably should have bought some defenders. Their most expensive signing is that Diop couldn't even get on the bench. Wasn't even probably their best centre back, and he wasn't even involved in the game whatsoever. So, strange one for me.
I mean, at least they've decided to make the change in goal now. I mean, it was 3 weeks too late, but they eventually bit the bullet.
Well, I think it was either Pellegrini goes or Roberto goes, one of the two.
It's made such a difference, though, hasn't it? I mean, you could almost trace their decline. I was at the game against Bournemouth when Fabianski was injured. And they've barely won a game since. I think up until that point, he made more saves since the start of last season than any other goalkeeper.
Well, they've won one game in 10 matches, and that one game was when David Martin came in and made his debut.
Yeah, and it's just typical West Ham that they beat Chelsea away and then go to Wolves and get turned over.
There's a problem with the squad, though, isn't there? Yeah. It's disjointed. There are too many number 10s, too many flair players. They're relying on Mark Noble. I think, is he going to play his 500th game in the coming weeks? But he isn't the player that he was. I think his legs have gone a little bit. He can't quite get around the pitch as much as he used to. Defensively, they're a shambles. But I'll tell you what, we talked about this with Everton. And this is also what happens when you let fans decide who the manager is, because they handed out Slaven Bilic, who I think is a decent manager. He's proving it at West Bromwich Albion.
Didn't want David Moyes and Stuart Pearce.
He did a good job, Slaven Bilic, under difficult circumstances at West Ham. He oversaw the stadium move. He had the Paille situation to contend with. Then Pellegrini's been coming, been given vastly much more money than Bilic was. And I think he's taken them backwards.
Well, Haller has scored once since August the 31st. He's getting slated, not competing. He's left isolated up top, but he doesn't look as if he's trying to win headers. I think because he thinks, what's the point? You know, what's the point of me jumping and winning a header and there's no one around me within 20 yards? Antonio's injured again. Most of their recent goals have come from defenders. They can't defend. They can't score. Doesn't sound like a recipe for success, does it? I mean, if he loses on Monday night against an Arsenal team that aren't particularly performing very well.
I was going to say, that's the one positive, isn't it? West Ham have got all these problems, but they're playing Arsenal at home, so...
Yeah. And Arsenal are poor away from home, aren't
they? But if he doesn't win that game, is he going to end up being the next manager that's given the job? I mean, they're not going to wait around forever, are they?
No,
I mean, at the end of the day, if they get dragged into a relegation battle...
It's an expensive business, though, isn't it? He's on good money, he's got a big backroom staff.
It's not as expensive as relegation.
Most expensive West Ham manager ever, I think, isn't he? With his wages, £6-7 million.
It was a good appointment.
I wasn't on board with it when he came in. I wasn't one that was, you know, singing his praise and stuff. I wasn't really sure. For me, he's just uninspiring. Doesn't inspire the players, his personality. I don't think he's someone that's going to, you know, knock heads together in the dressing room. You look at him tactically, I think at times he's found one. Even when he was Man City manager at times, I thought tactically he was off the pace.
This sounds like a terrible criticism, and I don't mean to be outlandish here with this statement, but ultimately, in his time as the Manchester City manager, with the most expensively assembled squad in modern history, he failed to win the Premier League more often than he actually did win the Premier League.
Yeah, Champions League was a problem as well.
Well, he got to the semi-final of that.
4-4-2 in the Champions League and getting turned over. But, I mean, I think you'll get a bit more time. I think David Sullivan...
Do you?
Yeah, I think you'll get a few more games, but they won't hang around forever.
Again, though, they're not going down.
No.
They're probably not going to achieve the ambitions that they set out at the start of the season. But in some ways, what's the point in making the managerial change now if there isn't somebody better equipped to do the job?
Marco Silva will be available very shortly. Right, the Blades have drawn half their games so far this season. Can they get a win over Norwich at Carrow Road? Here's Tom Rennie.
Norwich City find themselves in 19th in the table, beaten comfortably by fellow strugglers Southampton after being unlucky not to pick up victory against Arsenal at the weekend. Daniel Farke's side can't be faulted for application, but even he's admitted they're still favourites to finish the season in position 20. Their campaign does have a feel of enjoy it while it lasts about it, and Teemu Pukki certainly is. He's now got 8 goals, the best top-flight return for a Canary since Granholt's 7 in 2013. Sheffield United are well away from all the noise at the bottom of the table, though their small squad will be tested by the tight turnaround from Thursday to Saturday, and they'll want to protect striker Lise Mousset as much as possible. He looked unsuited to the Premier League whilst at Bournemouth, but that's all changed now. The Frenchman's been involved in the majority of goals the Blades have scored in recent weeks.
OK, let's move to the Dream Team section of the programme. And Andrew Butler is here. Danny, be very careful. If you start flirting with him, he will start offering an opportunity for him to walk you home.
Is that right, mate?
Yeah. He's very chivalrous.
There's a story here.
Yeah. What I want to do, Gabby, is ask you about your Wales career. You know.
Oh, right.
Okay. Oh, all of a sudden, all of a sudden, they're holding hands. Right. Talking of holding hands, Ndombele will be back in the middle of the park, I'm sure, on Saturday alongside Harry Winks for Tottenham when they play Burnley. I thought Sissoko got dragged out of position trying to help Aurier out far too much against Rashford on Wednesday night. Winks doesn't get you any points, though, and you can't select Eriksen. Harry Kane hasn't scored for 2 games. He hasn't gone 3 games without a goal all season. So you know he is the man you have to put in this weekend.
Yeah, Kane is. But Dele Alli as well. We need to mention him.
He's not going to keep scoring forever, though, is he?
Well, the way he's going at the moment, he's been only picked by 2.2% of players in Dream Team this season. So he is one of those guys that you might just think, if he does carry on his form, definitely worth a shout, because he's only in the game at 3.2 million as well. So he might... I agree that he probably won't carry on scoring like he is, but you know, he's in good form, and Mourinho obviously likes him a lot. Kane and Son are the runaway leaders in terms of total points scored for Spurs this season so far. 116 for Kane, 114 for Son. Kane and Son also the second and sixth most picked in Dream Team in this game week as well. So the most transferred in. And so obviously players fancy them to do the business against Burnley as well.
Tarkowski getting a lot of mentions.
Yeah, I mean, Burnley, well, they didn't, you know, pull up any trees against against Man City. Tarkowski, you mentioned him, he actually got minus 4 points this game week. He's gone back down to 37 points. He is the second highest picked player of Burnley's team in Dream Team this season. 1.1% of teams have him. Nick Pope's got 1.9%. But I mean, really, Burnley, they're an unfashionable club and very unfashionable on Dream Team as well, just in terms of who people are picking from there. There's no kind of real standouts, but Tarkowski might be your best bet, really.
Okay. Anyone got any Burnley players in their Dream Team?
No.
Nick Pope.
Have you?
Have you?
Did you get you any points?
Negative or positive?
Okay, let's move on to Aston Villa against Leicester. Romeo Butler, who's getting the love in this fixture?
Well, any of the defenders.
Oh, really?
Congratulations.
For both teams?
Well, no, for Leicester. Congratulations to Ricardo Pereira. He's shot up to being the highest defender in point scoring in Dream Team this season.
He's a good player, isn't he?
He is. I've got him. Very good player.
97 points in total, which is phenomenal. And Chanelas Soyuncu has got 72. He's actually gone up to second as the highest point scoring defender in Dream Team as well. Similar to Kane and Son, they were the fifth and seventh most transferred in players this week. Chilwell and Kasper Schmeichel are ninth and tenth. So
Kasper Schmeichel.
Schmeichel.
is he Peter's other son? There's so, a little shimmy.
It's like a cross between Schumacher and Schmeichel.
Because a lot about Leicester is made to do with their attacking team. You know, yeah. We talk a lot about Vardy and Madison and their exploits going forward. But ultimately, the defence are not only earning them a few points in Dream Team, it's helping them earn quite a few points in the Premier League.
Well, yeah, Kasper Schmeichel, the second highest goal scorer.
It's just Schmeichel.
Schmeichel. Have I been getting this wrong my entire life? Because I must have been going throughout the 90s as
go
well,
on,
calling
go on.
Peter
Schmeichel. One more time, go on.
Schmeichel.
It's actually a very good characteristic. So now when all of the ladies of London are being chatted up in a bar, they'll know that it's Romeo Butler by the way he says Schmeichel.
I can't believe this. I need to have words with my school friends because they didn't even pick me up on this when I was saying Peter Schmeichel's
name.
What
they've been saying behind your back.
I know. Let's just call him Kasper for now. He's the second highest scoring goalkeeper in the game after Edison. He's got 49 points so far this season. Edison's got 51. So I agree, a lot is made of their attack. Obviously the 9-0 win against Southampton is still being talked about. They keep on scoring quite freely, but it's their defence actually that's really rooting them.
Okay, and any plans for this week? Any Christmas parties?
I'm actually going to Sarajevo this weekend.
Are you?
Yeah.
You're going to shimmy down in Sarajevo?
Bit of scouting.
Oh, really?
Some football scouts.
Oh, right. Okay, just to get it right. Thank you very much.
I'm done.
Andrew Butler from Dream Team. Now, Wolves, threatening to reach the European places again, take on Brighton in their 29th match of the season. Here's Tom Rennie.
Brighton's start to this season has so impressed the hierarchy at the club, they've already awarded manager Graham Potter a contract extension just 6 months after joining the club. Potter's points tally is not much better than what Chris Hughton offered. In fact, after 14 matches, it was their lowest points tally at this stage of a Premier League season. But the quality of football on offer at least doesn't make you consider all of your life choices at half-time, and that seems enough for Seagulls fans at this time. Wolves' win over West Ham in midweek was rewarded with the rarest of treats for players at Molineux, a day off. Wanderers' season has been less sporting calendar, more Victorian workhouse in its intensity, but that's not affected them at all. In fact, they're having their best unbeaten run in the top flight since 1972 as they've slowly and quietly progressed to fifth place. boss Nuno Espirito Santo has been linked with Arsenal in recent days. But after 10 matches without loss and players working themselves into the ground over 28 grueling matches, while still picking up points, why on earth would he want to go anywhere else?
Alex Crook is TalkSport South Coast correspondent, and you had an interesting chat with Ralph Hasenhüttl after the aftermath of that 9-0 thrashing and the sort of support that he's got.
Yeah, actually, he didn't thank me at the time. His face turned last night when I reminded him of the 9-0 game, but it was to put some context in their results since then. I was basically saying, how important has it been for you that when fans were calling for your head and there were various newspaper reports that your head was on the chopping board, that the board actually came out quite strongly and backed you and said, you're the man to turn it around. He said, yeah, look, it's abnormal that you lose 9-0. And the first thing the board did, Martin Semmons, the chief executive, was to put his arm around Hasenhüttl and say, look, you're our man. Don't worry. You're going to turn this around. And 7 points from nine games, 7 points out of a possible nine, a couple of decent performances against Manchester City. You have to say, with a very limited squad, you've got to credit the manager for the way he's turned it around.
The two back-to-back wins, though, were against Watford and Norwich, so I'm guessing no one's getting too excited on the South Coast.
No, and I also spoke to Jan Bednarek after the game, and he said we've got to stay humble, we haven't achieved anything yet, but they were pressure games. I mean, I was watching the Watford game at home on Saturday, having covered a championship match for TalkSport, and I tell you what, my eight-week-old daughter learnt some new expletives for the first hour of that game because they were absolutely dreadful. And I couldn't understand how they could be so good at Arsenal the previous week and just produce such a cowardly performance a few days later. But again, he made a couple of changes in the second half, turned it around. If they'd have lost that game or the Norwich game, I think Southampton were down. Yeah. They've given themselves a fighting chance now.
What's it like to be in a dressing room where you've gone through a tough period? Everybody thinks that the manager's going to go. Not everybody, but a lot of people immediately point the finger at the manager, and then the club come out and say he's not going anywhere. How do the players react to that? Because there is a bit of a fractious relationship with some of the players in that dressing room and Ralph Hasenhüttl.
It can be a mixed kind of reaction really within the squad. You know, if you're buying into the manager and it's just a thing where you're just not picking up results and the chairman comes out and says that, then you're quite happy to hear it. But if you're not having a manager, what he's trying to do isn't working. And as players, you can kind of see that and you feel maybe something needs to change. Or as a team of players, maybe you have to go above the manager. Maybe think, look, we need to sort this ourselves. Then that's probably not the news you want to hear. But I saw Southampton before the international break where Everton went down there and beat them. And I was really fearing for them at that point because they looked really poor. And to be fair, he's changed the system, I think, as well. He was playing 3-4-3, and it was not working. They couldn't play through midfield. They couldn't get their front players on the ball. And credit to him, after the international break, he's gone back to a back four. They would have targeted those two home games as must-win games. You know, Danny Ings has popped up.
Well, I was going to say, it helps if you've got a goal scorer like Danny Ings, who can score double figures.
He's on double figures already in a team that don't create a lot of chances. Yeah. 10 in all competitions. Yeah. And if he stays fit, and that is a big if because he's had his injury problems, they've got James Ward-Prowse, who might have his limitations from open play, but he gets in the team every week just because of his dead ball delivery. And both goals against Norwich came from James Ward-Prowse set pieces. They've got a chance. They still can't defend. There's no money in January. They're going to be bottom five.
Yeah.
They may just have enough to finish above the dotted line.
Newcastle might be down there as well. They thrashed Southampton last season in April. Iosi Perez getting a hat-trick in that game. I did that match. In fact, Southampton have won at St James's Park once since 1997. Spooky.
Confident lads, as I say, that
why would you do that,
away.
Paul?
I don't know.
Volleyed pass infield to nobody. First mistake of the day.
He's a good player.
Isn't it amazing how that happens?
I have no words for it.
How did that just happen there?
I have no.
He hasn't made a mistake all day.
No.
As soon as you say he's good, he can't find a teammate. He thinks he's playing for Villa. What have you done?
I didn't do anything. I get. You know what? I praised him.
You're a witch, Mortimer. A witch.
Ah, oh, I love that. Happens all the time. This week, Alex Crook sent me a text message in our pre-match WhatsApp group. I've got a brilliant commentator's curse, he said. So big build-up.
Yeah.
Do not let
I'm
us down.
I'm expecting big things here.
You saw, I got excited when he said this. Did you?
I did a little bit, yeah.
This is good. I don't know if it's going to curse him or not because the game is not being played under the floodlights.
Oh, whatever you do, don't try and dial it down now.
No, but I've got proof if we needed it. Divock Origi. is actually a vampire.
What? Please go on.
He has 5 goals and 1 assist in matches played in daylight.
Yeah.
29 goals and 7 assists in matches played under the floodlights.
Wow. That is impressive. Count Origi.
He's got to play though next game.
Told you it was a good one.
So their match on Saturday is away at Bournemouth.
Yeah, what time?
The floodlights will come on at some point, I'd imagine. It is a 3
but
o'clock
it is,
kickoff.
It's a daylight game.
It's a daylight
game.
So
he can only score in the second half if he comes on as a sub.
Do you think Jürgen knows this?
Yeah. This is fantastic.
That they cover everything, don't they? With a fine tooth comb, I'm sure Jürgen Klopp is acutely aware.
Yeah, Jürgen has done the blood tests. He knows that his blood is...
No tombstone left unturned.
Tombstone.
Very good. Okay, yeah, it wasn't bad, that. I quite liked it. What have you got, Danny?
I'm going to go with a Manchester derby. I have to go for Marcus Rashford. As my ex-colleague Daniel James calls him Rashy. I don't know if that's his
Rashy
nickname. I quite like that, Rashy. It's
Rashy.
Nice. Yeah, but anyway, Marcus
Rashford.
You've got
a very odd look from Alex Cook there.
He's like...
Just looking at you and saying, what are you Rashford talking about?
So, Marcus Rashford, 6 goals in the last 6 Premier League games. Was he 9 goals now? This season, I think 9 Premier League goals. That's just one shy of his total goals haul, I think,
from last season.
4 assists. Match week 15, out of all the players that performed, he was first for attempts on goal, shots on target, shots in the box. We mentioned Manchester United, of course, performing well against the top six teams. He performs well against the top 6 teams as well. 5 goals against Chelsea, 3 against Liverpool, 3 against Tottenham, 2 against Arsenal and 2 against Man City, who obviously they're playing on the weekend. So nobody can tell me that he is not going to score.
Okay, we'll find out live on TalkSport 5:30 and across the rest of the world on Premier League Live. Now Leicester, they're on a wonderful run of form, aren't they? They've won 7 straight league games. The last time that they did that was March 1963. Summer holiday was hitting the cinemas. My suit was in fashion the first time around. And they finished 4th in the league. Frank McClintock was in the team. Ken Keyworth. Gordon Banks in the team. You remember him, don't you?
I do. I'm not that young.
Okay. This weekend, they take on Aston Villa away from home, knowing that they've never won, never in their history, they've never won 8 league matches in a row. Brendan, breaking records. Definitely. Okay, I'm reliably informed that you have to go to Apple Podcasts if you want to subscribe to our Game Day podcast feed now. Spotify, Acast, all of those services that you might use to download your audio entertainment. You'll be able to subscribe to the Game Day feed, which has got not only this fantastic podcast with Danny Gabaldon and the sloth that is Alex Crook, we've also got Laura Woods, Adrian Durham, the Ginger Prince, and Danny Kelly, who also brings you the verdict on a Monday morning. That's it from us for this week. We're back next week at the usual time, earlier in the week, because we've got another massive weekend of football. Make sure you enjoy it.
That was a podcast from TalkSport.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on TalkSport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.